On today's episode of Junkin' with Jenny, we'll show you how we took a blank wall and turned it into an amazing built-in electric fireplace. Some creative ideas for a not-so-creative-looking home. Also, a bunch of Junkin' ideas for various objects that you guys have sent in through email. All that and more on today's episode of Junkin' with Jenny.
My question would be, did you do your homework earlier today? Did you get my email with all those images on to start kind of conjuring up ideas?
I did get your email.
You didn't read it.
No, full disclosure, I glanced at the images. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to kind of wing it tonight because I was in the middle of a big project finish up today.
You're going to phone this in, aren't you? You're just going to be like, portrait table, put a beer on it. Is that how it's going to go?
No, okay. I think I can do better than that on the
fly. I do too. I know.
I think it'll be good. We'll have fun.
I'm excited. I don't know what the hell to do with any of these things, so I'm really hoping you do.
Okay.
And if you're wondering, there's some of the items that we'll be talking about that you guys have sent images in on and saying, hey, what should I do with these? I don't even know what they're called, but they're the things that used to be put into the soles of shoes to create the shoe size.
For a shoe cobbler.
For a shoe cobbler, uh-huh. Yes. I always think of peach cobbler, but do you think cobblers ate a lot of cobbler back in their day?
Probably not.
It's kind of got sick of that too.
Yeah.
Like, oh, cobbler for my cobbler. And there's like eight cobblers in back with no refrigeration.
That's fun.
That's how that went down. A lot of cobblers probably died because they ate tainted cobbler.
Could have been.
Do you ever think of that?
No.
I'm just connecting all these dots into history's mysteries tonight.
Right.
So, yeah. Hi. We have a lot of interesting stuff to talk about tonight. Some really cool projects that we have recently wrapped up.
Yes.
Like in the last couple hours, quite literally.
Like, I changed my shirt for the show, but I, full disclosure, I'm still wearing my paint pants.
And I'm not wearing any pants. Because we only shoot from the waist up, so.
He's wearing pants.
Just so
don't
you know.
Weirded out.
Just so you know. So lots of interesting things to talk about with the, I always just say fireplace. It's, how do you, hearth sounds a little more warm and inviting. How do you describe what our big project is that we're going to be discussing here this evening on the program?
It's a fireplace with double stacked mantles.
Okay.
There's no hearth involved. Hearth is the part that kind of sticks out in the front where you sit and.
Oh, that would be the hearth.
That's technically the hearth.
Oh, okay.
So we did not do a hearth on this one.
Okay. I always thought the hearth was more so like another word for the mantle. I was unaware that that is actually the little thing that sticks out in front that you can sit on and roast your butt by.
Yeah, no, that's a different part.
I call it the butt roaster. I was unaware that that was actually called a hearth.
Butt roaster.
I learn new things every time we do this show.
Yeah.
It is exciting. Our creative juice this week comes to us. It's Missouri Wine Month here on the show. So this one comes to us from Macon, Missouri. And it is 107 Vine.
Yeah.
And I was saying, is it 107 Vine? 107 just seems more, it sounds like a radio station, you know. Welcome to 107 Vine. Here's the latest from Robin. Show me love. Yeah. That's how it goes. Anyhow.
That's my thing
now. 107 Vine. Only the biggest hits. So anyway, this is an interesting group of two people, husband, wife team. Chris and Jen are their names, and they like wine. And they started seeing, oh, hey, you know what? People are making their own wine and maybe we should give that a shot. This could be kind of fun. This is around like 2004-ish.
Okay.
They were just kind of experimenting in their home. And that experiment kind of became a bit of an obsession. We don't know anything about that with our hobbies or anything.
No.
From then, they their friends loved them because they'd come over and then every time they left, they'd go home with like bottles of wine. Great way to make friends, you know, by the way. Then they started going, you know, we really love doing this. What can we actually make this into a business? So one of them started doing the research on legally what you have to do to have a winery and make liquor and sell liquor. And then the other one did the research on how to actually make it commercially, like at a beyond the kitchen level. And then they opened up their own thing. West Wines out of Macon, Missouri. It's actually the first, their storefront is in downtown Macon, Missouri. So it makes it technically the first urban winery, which is becoming a thing.
Okay.
In the state of Missouri, using Missouri grapes.
That's
so
awesome.
It's pretty cool. They have a whole bunch of different wines. They sent us a handful of them because we don't want to die on this episode. We have two bottles here tonight. We're not going to do every single one they sent us, but probably in a future episode, we can have some of the other ones as well. They actually had some really interesting, almost kind of spooky-ish looking bottles, which we may even use on our ghost show, Real Ghost Stories Online. But 107 Vine, we have the Chardonnay, which is a white grape. It's almost kind of like cousin to a Chardonnay and has some fairly similar properties, grows really well in the state of Missouri. And the Chamberson as well, which another, this is a red that does pretty well in the state and this climate. So I grabbed those two thinking these will probably be some good representations of what our climate does here and what can be created. So that's our creative juice. Thank you guys over at West Wines. And I believe that's the website, westwines.com. Just look them up and or do Google and you'll find them. And
do Google.
Do Google. Everybody, so I'm going to Google you and you'll find them.
It's very good.
It is.
I really like that.
It really, it almost kind of starts out like a Chardonnay, and then it, I just want to say it kind of finishes really kind of minerally dry, but I like it. It's a good sipping wine. I could see that going really well with like Fettuccine Alfredo.
Okay.
I could see this working very well with that. So anyhow, thank you guys for that. All right.
Oh, I want fettuccine. Thank you for that.
Well, it just happens to be, I have some fettuccine. I have an emergency fettuccine stash. It's like a break glass here in case of emergency. It's break a glass here in case of fettuccine.
Okay.
And you hit it with a spoon, a wooden spoon, and then you have fettuccine. Let me go. I'm going to go. It's in the hall. I'll be right back.
Let's just move on. I can wait.
Just in case.
After the show for fettuccine.
Okay.
Okay.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm good.
We could ask everybody just to wait.
No,
nope,
I'm
go
totally
make some.
Good. Totally good.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about our first project here. This is a project that we've been talking about for quite a while, and we've gotten to it, and we really knocked it out fairly quick. This is the fireplace project is what I call it. What do you name it? What's your romantic name for it that's more better than fireplace project?
It's technically a faux fireplace.
Faux fireplace project.
So we went and put a faux fireplace in.
Okay.
Because to run the gas line or have the chimney put in for a real fireplace in a room where it doesn't exist was way outside of what we wanted to spend. Mm-hmm. We mainly wanted the appearance of a full functioning fireplace, but with no hassle and minimal expense.
And that's really what we were able to do from the ground up. As you could see, if you're watching the video, you can see it on our website at junkinwithjenny.com, before and after pictures of this. And we literally started out here with a giant blank canvas, and it was just a wall, just a big old
wall with a clock.
Yeah, wall with a clock. It's a very nice open room, but it needed some character.
It needed a lot of character, especially since when you walk in the front door, this is the first room that you walk into. And other than the big, you know, there's a huge window that overlooks the Ozarks, and I love that. Mm-hmm. But the room was just a blank canvas, like you said, and it just needed some coziness, some hominess, and I love fireplaces. So when we were out, we were kind of just randomly stopped in this antique store in this tiny town that we live near, after a pizza run, I have to say, and went in there and found these two mantles, and I didn't get it at first. I didn't realize that they were stacked, that that's how they originally had been. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, somebody just pulled these two mantles out of their home and they looked like they went together, but they were different sizes. So I assumed they were in two different areas. And then the guy, the owner, whoever, he informed me that he thought they had been stacked. And I started looking at the larger one and it had marks where the shorter one had been on it. And I was like, ooh, that's just perfect for that room because that room has 13-foot ceilings.
And it's been sitting in our garage for about a year.
Yeah.
Waiting for us to do this project. And we've had different variations on it, and this is kind of how it all ended up coming together. Right. And this is something where I think, I don't think I would have realized we could do this until you did it and put it all together. And it's like, oh, well, that makes sense. That's not that hard.
If you give a girl Legos, she's going to learn how to build. So from playing with Legos as a little girl, kind of figured out and watching contractors over the years, how you just start with one piece and you go from there.
So step by step, first things first, we had to kind of figure out exactly how are we going to do this thing. And we just started out by outlining on the wall. We took the mantles in there before we painted them, before we did anything to them, outlined it on the wall.
And Magic Marker just literally drew it on the wall so that we made sure we weren't, you know, off. We had a visual the whole time. Yeah. I mean, obviously you're going to measure your cuts, but I'm such a visual person. I like to have kind of the, here's how this is going to all lay out. It's almost like sewing patterns. Mm-hmm. You know, you put that on top of the fabric when you cut it out. That's what we did with this.
So if you find a mantle like this, or it doesn't even have to be double stacked, but if you find one at an antique store going, I don't know how I would install that or use that. I don't have a fireplace to put. You don't need one. You can make one yourself.
You can.
And this is how we did it. First thing we had to think about, well, where do we need electric? Where do we, how are we going to do this? We obviously need electric to plug in the electric fireplace insert.
And we already had one outlet on the wall, but I knew when we did this, my big picture was to have two built-in cabinets with lamps and some, you know, sconce lighting on the top mantle. So I knew we needed at least electrical behind the built-ins that we could, you know, cut cord holes for, and then also power run to the top mantle. So you know, we had an electrician come out and do that part. That part we did not do.
That's very much something that we're not going to, you know, risk dying for. So we got, that was the only thing we had to have somebody come out and do. We got a good electrician friend who comes out. And if you don't have an electrician, call around a little bit. There's some crazy expensive electricians out there. And there's a lot of reasonably low priced ones too.
Right.
Get a lot of quotes. Look around. Because I swear, I think I probably called about 8 electricians. I wasn't sure of who to call in our area because I've only been here about 2 years. And it's insane the difference in quotes that you can get sometimes. We found a guy who works really reasonably low and can just jump in, get the job done, and it's not an arm and a leg. So that's a good tip for finding electricians.
And if they let you buy, if they tell you the materials you're going to need and let you buy it, then you're even not better. Having to get it from them with a markup.
Exactly.
So that'll save you a little bit too. You may have to have a crash course on electrical components, but you can learn that.
If they're really good, they'll say what you need.
Yeah, exactly.
Go get this. Here's your shopping list. Right. Go get it. Thank you. So we did that. We had the electrician come out, did a little ripping around the walls and got everything exactly where we needed it to be. And then from there, it began the round of framing. And that's where it was, you know, kind of we had some basic framing knowledge and the technicalities of the framing. I don't know if there's a lot of technicalities to this. This is kind of a box you build yourself.
It was really kind of a, how are we going to get this done? And we knew roughly what we needed. My biggest concern was making sure this thing didn't tip over. So we affixed it two studs within the wall. Overkill. I mean, we decided not to just, you know, attach it to one specific one specific stud. We did boards that ran the whole width of the fireplace all the way up and made sure each of those were in the stud. So this thing's no way going to fall over even in an earthquake.
I think if anything, we probably overframed.
We did.
Which is good. I mean, you can do that. And then once we had the framing up, and a lot of it was, you know, measure as you go, you know, looks like this needs a little extra support here. It's not necessarily that you're going to ever find a perfect guide for this, especially when you're building with your own shape and size and all that. It's just kind of figure it out.
And I will say one thing, being that this is a faux fireplace, mm-hmm. and we don't have a chimney or a flue or anything going up through this, we could have a little more wiggle room.
Yeah.
If you actually are framing around something that's going to be transmitting smoke or
a little different.
Or
yeah.
fire, there's guidelines for that.
You need a professional, I think, at that point when you're dealing with real fire.
But for us, we didn't have that to worry about. This was just purely aesthetic.
Exactly. So once we had the framing all kind of figured out and put up, we could see, okay, we can affix boards to this and it will work. Everything's measured out. Use a level. That's a big key to a lot of this project. Then we're able to start putting up the framing of it and such. And actually, here is that video, the shiplap.
And I know everybody's probably getting tired of me saying shiplap, but I wanted a brick and shiplap fireplace, so... My goodness, that's what we came out with. I just decided instead of dealing with more sheetrock and sheetrock dust, mm-hmm. I'm just going to go old school and do this.
Then once you had the shiplap up, you did some brickwork actually, but it was...
It's tile. It's porcelain tile that is the same size as brick, and you put up tile board if you don't already have sheetrock or drywall where you mm-hmm. are going to affix it. And I didn't, so I thought I'm just going to go ahead and go with concrete tile board and make sure that, you know, it's sound so mm-hmm. it does not crack and fall out on me.
And you affixed the brick tiles.
Mm-hmm.
What was the affixing method there?
I just actually spread the mastic on the tiles mm-hmm. and on the tile board. And the reason I did that, I just wanted to make sure there was plenty to create that suction to hold these, you know, they're about 2.5 inches by 10 inches long mm-hmm. bricks without them sliding on me. So if you spread your mastic on the tile board and also back butter your tile, you get a better stick, if you will.
Okay. Got that up. Then we put up the actual mantles themselves.
We did.
And fixed them right to the shiplap there.
And we painted them kind of a soft, it's called Coastal Plain. It's a Sherwin-Williams color, but it's kind of a soft sage that has a little more blue tint to it. So it works with the teal that we used in the rest of the room. And it really popped against the red brick and the white shiplap.
Mm-hmm. Back buttering is the word you're looking for when you were putting the...
I said back buttering.
You did. Okay. Somebody said back buttering.
I said I put the mastic on the tile board and I back buttered the tile.
I guess I missed it. I just saw somebody said back buttering.
I worked in flooring and tile work for too long to not know that term. So
I like, and sometimes I'll go and get a tan by back buttering. And that
you have a Kramer moment.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Back buttering. Anyway, that's how we did it. We put that on there. The accent that you added to the side, you had the cabinetry on the sides there.
I went and got, you know, stock cabinetry, and I tend to, for built-ins that I don't want a whole lot of depth for, I just use wall cabinets. And I had a floor vent that was going to be square underneath one of these, so I put furniture feet on the bottom of these wall cabinets, and then I made the countertops out of just some white board and then trimmed it out and stained it really dark. I wanted kind of a rustic look. But, you know, wall cabinets traditionally are only about 12 inches deep, so that's the whole depth of the fireplace was 12 inches plus the mantles on the front, and it didn't protrude into the room too much, so it didn't take up a lot of our footprint, you know. And mm-hmm. I found that it holds what we need it to hold.
It does. And we also were able to drill right into the top of the cabinets there to hide our power cords.
Yes.
Right into those outlets right there.
So the lamp cords, like running electrical through cabinetry, but because you can access the outlets mm-hmm. through the back of the cabinets.
Yeah, so it works out really, really well. And that's how we got our lovely fireplace project complete, from just a blank canvas wall to that.
And we didn't mention the sconces. The sconces we actually found when we were out junking, and they're outdoor lighting. Mm-hmm. I liked the shape of them because they kind of look like small gas lamps that kind of had a French curve coil kind of design on the top. And they were in really bad shape. They were completely roached out. The wiring looked to be in really good shape. So I brought them home, cleaned them up, made them copper, and we put in some of those flicker flame light bulbs. And the trick to those is making sure your glass is fogged. So I took the glass out of these fixtures, went outside, sprayed them so they fogged up. And then it looks like old gas lamps.
It really does. And it's really neat the way it flickers. They're LED flicker flame bulbs. You can find them online. And they're kind of a new thing.
Sure.
They started kind of popping up in my feed one day. I'm like, what is this? And then that was like about a year ago. And initially, if you saw that about a year ago, they were expensive. They were like $50-$60 about a year ago. They've come way down in price because
they're about $10 a bulb.
Yeah. So you can get them now relatively cheap, and I'm sure they're just going to go lower and lower. But look on Amazon or whatever. There's a lot of ways to use those bulbs. They're really, cool, especially with a fogged something. Mm-hmm. Or if you have I could even see, they make the giant fake candles now too, where you could get one in there and make it look neat. It's a cool bulb.
The last component to the fireplace is obviously the part that looks like the firebox.
Yes.
So we went and ordered on Amazon, we ordered I think it was called Permaflame, but it's a faux fireplace that it has all the lighting and everything to look like flame, and it produces heat, but it's only about 8 inches deep. So it did not need to actually, protrude into the wall.
Yeah.
So that's part of the reason we built the fireplace out the 12 inches, was to make sure we not only had enough room for the firebox, but also for the cord back there.
And that's a key thing. Before you even begin this project, before you start building out your space, get your firebox so you know exactly how deep it has to be, because that'd be the worst part of, I'm an inch off.
And the specifications tell you how much room, and it usually has a give of an inch or two, but it's nice to have it so you can actually put it in the framing. We did that a couple of times just to make sure our hole for it was the right size.
Exactly. And that's just get it. If you're going to do it, get that first, measure it. You got it to play with as you go through the process. And then you know that you got the right piece for it. I think it turned out great. It's better than what I had in my mind.
I had envisioned it all white, but I'm so glad we did the green, because I think it would have been lost in the wall if we had just done the white. And I love green. You love green. Mm-hmm. That was one of our wedding colors, so we just went with it.
It's a fun pop of color there. If you want more images of this project, go to our website, junkinwithjenny.com, and check it out. Okay, let's move on to, let's do an object. So we have another space that we did. We'll get to that a little bit later in the show. Let's see here. Item roulette. I'm going to do this. Here we go. The shoe shapes, the shoe molds, the iron. These would be violent objects. They're like wrought iron, shoe shape, like feet.
Cast iron.
Iron that you would, build a shoe over.
Yeah.
What the heck would you do with one of these things today?
Well, in the picture, there's three that have about the same leg length, but the foot is off obviously different sizes. But then there's some that don't have a leg, and it's just the foot, and it looks like just a footprint there.
Sure.
I don't really honestly have an idea for the ones that don't have legs, but I thought it would be funny to make a footstool literally out of those with three of them as legs.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
So you take a piece of wood and you pat it and you upholster it, and then you put these, in a kind of a tripod formation to make this footstool.
I could see that. Or it could even make, if you put some padding on the top of the feet, you could do like a little kind of glass coffee table with it too. It really exposes it.
Yeah, you could.
Then you could really see the feet sticking up.
You could. It's just you need some way for them to not you know, kind of topple over. And I thought if you affixed this to wood, that you would accomplish that, but you would see that the feet of the footstool were actually feet.
Mm-hmm.
Say that five times.
I can't. I'm not even going to attempt it. I'd make a foot tree. I don't even know how I would do that. I don't know if you probably, because
what the hell is a foot tree?
Well, you just kind of put them on top of each other and then you could hang things from it.
That's the shittiest idea I've ever heard. That's not even a good idea.
That's exactly what I would do. I would probably actually find a way to affix these directly to a wall out.
Okay.
As being some sort of an interesting, you know, conversation hanger piece of some sort. Because there's a lot of things you could potentially hang on these things.
Uh-huh.
And I would just find some place where I'm not going to run into it. And it's kind of off in its own, you know, area. Again, I don't know what I would do with the ones that don't have the fake leg on it, if you will.
I think a door stops. You just maybe wedge it under there. But yeah, that's not super creative. I just don't know.
I think I would maybe take an older piece of like barnwood or antique wood that kind of goes along with the theme of how old these things are, mm-hmm. affix them to that in a row, three in a row, long elongated piece, and just kind of put them in order, sequential order of size. And then that's your hanger. Maybe put some sort of etched phrase or word on top of it. I don't know what it would be. I would come up with something for it, you know, in like white paint, and that would be the piece. And it'd be like, what the hell is that hanging from your wall?
Uh-huh.
And you could hang coats on it. You could hang leashes on it. You could hang a wreath on it if you wanted to, really. But I would use it as some sort of interesting hanging piece if I had these. If it was like, oh, those are your great grandpa's pieces from his cobbler shop.
Okay.
Great grandpa who died of eating tainted peach cobbler.
I thought we were past that. I'm going to drink a little bit.
I'm not quite. Every time you say shiplap, I'm going to drink. And every time I say someone died of cobbler poisoning, you can drink. That's the game today.
Okay, just fine.
On the program. By the way, Ryan earlier, he's a flooring specialist at the Home Depot.
Awesome.
And he said Jenny did say it right before I corrected.
So, well, thank you.
So there you go. Wall art. Diana says wall art for that too. So I'm kind of in the same boat there. If you have an idea for any of the pieces that we talk about, or you'd like to save me because I have no idea what to do with some items on the show tonight, please do comment and I'll steal your comment and I'll say it was mine.
He'll give you credit.
I will. And there's a delay here, too. But do weigh in with your ideas for the objects that we are talking about this evening on the program. Let's go to an outdoor space that needs a little bit of help.
Okay, this is a cute little home, and it's probably maybe a two-bedroom home, mm-hmm. one-car garage. Probably, if I were to guess, maybe late 40s, early 50s, just by the shape of it.
I'm going to guess, here's my wild guess, the rest of this house is brick, just like the garage.
No, it's not.
I'm wondering if underneath that siding that's there,
uh-huh.
if it is, because that brick that's on the garage, it looks like it's a red brick, but there's like two different types of brick on this garage.
Uh-huh.
Bottom up about 2 or 3 feet is like modern brick, you can tell, was probably done in the last 20 years. And then the rest of it up is like a very old red firehouse type brick. And it goes back towards the house. And then that's about where it ends. And then you have siding on the rest of the house that looks fairly modern. What I'm wondering here is, does the rest of the house have that brick on it? And they just eventually sided it.
I'm not sure, unless they add it on and mm-hmm. that's
could be
covering up the addition.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very confused little house.
Yeah.
It's cute. It's got one rectangular window and then it's got one that's kind of a cathedral arch to it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The exposed rafters on the garage.
That needs to be fixed.
Well, I'm trying to figure out if they did that on purpose or if that is something that's yet to be completed, because certain craftsman style homes, they expose the rafters like that.
Sure, but this almost looks like it's an invite to squirrels to come into your roof.
It does. And, you know, it's not a good close-up picture to really tell, mm-hmm. oh, they're in the process of adding a soffit and gutters.
Sure.
But it kind of gave me the idea of make this a little cute craftsman. Mm-hmm. And even if they cover that up, maybe add some details to look like the rafters are sticking out.
Sure.
There's one post. It's a little kind of corner porch that, you know, it's just a square where you go in, but there's one post and I thought beef that up, you know, with the tapered craftsman style post, maybe do mm-hmm. brick around the bottom and kind of play up some of that and try and make it look like it's got a little more character than it does. The windows are kind of difficult because you've got such different styles there. I would add some trim to the smaller one to kind of beef it up a little bit and maybe add a little bit of trim to the big one, but in a proportional size to where it makes them visually not look so mm-hmm. like one's squinting at you.
Sure.
And it has no landscaping at all. You need to add some landscaping there.
Sarah Crom says bushes would do wonders.
Bushes would do wonders. I completely agree.
I would go and play with that brick. First of all, I'd find out if the rest of the house has the brick on it. Uh-huh. If it does, and depending on the shape of the brick, I would get rid of that siding and pull the brick out. And so you could see the brick and really make that part of the house, depending on the shape that it's in. If that's not an option, uh-huh. I would probably be changing the color of my siding. And I would go more with the fun kind of reddish. I'd make this a little red house.
You would make it red? See, yeah. I was thinking I would go with like a dark blue with kind of a white trim.
What would you do with the brick?
I would paint the older reddish looking mm-hmm. brick that's the top half of the garage mm-hmm. surround, but the bottom half I would leave it.
Okay. See, I would play more with the top half. I would go with that on the rest of the house, the more firehouse type red. I would get that onto the siding. I would then probably do something else with the more orangey brick, the more modern one. I might go a bit lighter with that, not red, but literally light. Mm-hmm. Maybe whitewash it or something. Do something also with there's a bit of a trim space on the bottom of the house. It almost looks like concrete. Probably match whatever I'm doing on that brick over there. Extend the porch out a little bit, probably with wood, unless you can afford to do some concrete. Concrete has gotten very expensive, but you could do you could expand it out, just a little tiny wooden platform over to where the end of that kind of eye window is. So you have a little more space there. You can put uh-huh. some rocking chairs out there. I would do craftsman style finishes on the pillar that's there. Same all the way out as far as a rail and everything. And if I could, I would also pull out the roof a little bit, create a bit of an awning onto the area that I pulled out as well. So you must have a tiny, tiny little covered porch.
Like a pergola.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be too, invasive or probably that crazy expensive to get done. And you have a nice little, porch area mm-hmm. to sit out on and look at the children as they go by and say, get off my porch.
Get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn. Yeah. Get off my lawn as you sit on your porch is what I'm trying to say. And just scream at people. Or you could just sit there peacefully and enjoy nature. One of the two. And then a lot of greenery. You need some bushes. You need some trees. You need something out there that would work. I don't know what part of the country this photo is from. So it's hard to say exactly what I would suggest, but something that would, I love low maintenance plants, stuff that would show up, grow up, and I don't have to do a ton of trimming too.
And I'm really excited about this design software that we just got that we're learning mm-hmm. and the ability to take some of these images that are sent in and actually show our thoughts without trying to describe them. But I mean, we'll still describe them, but it's better to have a picture.
It is. I mean, obviously this is a podcast as well, so the descriptions will continue.
Of course.
But it's one of those things where once you go to the website after you listen to the show, maybe when you're driving to work or whatnot, you can get on the site, on your phone, on the computer, whatever, and say, oh, yes, I see exactly what they're talking about, beyond just our verbal description.
Right.
And we can really show you some of the ideas that we have. It's going to be funny because I know we're going to end up looking back on these first like 20 some episodes someday going, oh my gosh, we didn't have this. We didn't have that yet. And it's really going to be some night and day changes. And I know that's one of my favorite things when we're watching like a home improvement show is watching the, and here's the computerized design. And it shows you what the person's thinking of their layout. And that's really what we're going to be able to do with the designs that are coming in.
Yeah.
Or the questions that are coming in for the interior, exterior of homes. We can say, here's our suggestion.
Literally draw you a picture.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. And I don't know if it's going to be starting next week or soon. It will be soon. We just got the software this week in, starting to get it, learning it. Mm-hmm. You've already drafted up our pantry, which is going to be on either next week or the following week.
Right.
And that's one of our upcoming projects is how to really kind of create a fun, usable pantry space. It's going to be fun. There's a lot of interesting things.
I'm super excited about the doors. Can I talk about the doors? That was my junk and find this week.
The door. Oh yeah, you went out and found some interesting things to add to the pantry project.
Well, right now it's a 4-foot by 5-foot pantry, and the door swings in, so mm-hmm. it eats a lot of space.
Sure.
And I wanted to put a sliding door on there, but I knew I wanted an old half glass door that's got the window in the top half and then the panels on the bottom. Mm-hmm. So I've been looking and looking, and it's hard to find old doors anymore because everybody that sells antiques, they find these old doors and they use them as display or yeah. part of the, you know, the backdrop for their booths. And it's a great idea, but it's made it really hard for somebody that wants one to mm-hmm. use as a functioning door.
Sure.
So went to this little place where I usually go, found one, really loved it. The paint's all chippy and everything. It was perfect.
Lead. It's like Pringles.
It's going to get cleaned up to where it's safe to be around the food. And anyway, went back the next day to get it. And then I found out it had a sibling. It was another door from the same house, same hardware, same old door. They'd been together for 100 years. So I didn't have the heart to split them up. So we had twin doors.
But what was a love child? It was love child's door.
No, but
not quite like the other one.
They made me a deal that I could not refuse.
Yeah.
So we brought both of them home. So now I'm going to do the laundry room and the pantry. But I just, when you find something that's been together that long, mm-hmm. think twice before splitting it up, just because it's probably never going to ever find its mate again. And the opportunity to have two of the same thing that old is pretty rare.
And your house would be haunted as hell if you break those up.
No, that's not what I was thinking about.
That's what I'm thinking about.
I thought, you know, somebody built their house 100 years ago, put mm-hmm. these doors on there, and these are the last two, and they've been together. It's like, I'm kind of sentimental that way. I had to bring them both home.
It is. It's neat, I think, to keep pieces like that together.
Yeah.
It's not hoarding. It's
no,
it's,
they
it's,
have a purpose yes. and they have a spot where they're going to go. They're not just going to accumulate.
Exactly. They're not just going to a shed to
no,
sit
no.
for years.
I don't do that.
To give to your children.
Mom, I don't no, do kidding. That.
My mom, actually, she's always done crafts and, yeah. and she's very, very creative. And it's funny because she has a bunch of old doors now. Yeah. But for a while, she was doing projects
windows.
For them. Windows. She, yeah, windows. And she's got she had a couple doors.
One of which is right behind us.
Yeah.
That was Christmas, not this last mm-hmm. Christmas, but Christmas the year before. And
yeah.
I love it.
And she just finally... She reached out to somebody and got one of her windows that she's painted some interesting animal stuff on sold at one of the, it's not like an antique store. I mean, it's somewhat antique. What do you call these days where it's a mix of antique and boutique?
It's kind of a co-op where people yeah. make things and bring them in and it yeah. creates a store that's always kind of got similar theme, but it's by different artists in the area.
It's like a modernized, we always used to call them like craft barns, but that's like such an old term, you know? Right. It like, it's, these are cool though. They have like neat stuff like you'd actually want. It's not just doilies.
A kind of a craft consignment.
Yeah.
But things are more on the artsy level, not just here's the trend and everybody's got, you know.
I got it.
What?
Interior consignment.
Okay, kind of.
Interior design consignment. Interior, you know, so I think it's because these are things that fit all different styles and whatnot.
Kind of.
I'm just trying to come up with a classier word than craft barn.
Yeah, craft barn's not the way to go on that.
I used to go to one and have chocolate crepes. Although I know you've like made real crepes for me, like French style crepes, and they're like paper thin. The crepes we used to get were pretty much chocolate pancakes with ice cream mixed in them.
But that's good.
It was delicious, but it was like my idea of a crepe. Not quite accurate to what a real crepe is.
You like my crepes? I haven't
made great.
Those in like 9 years.
But that was the exciting. That's how mom got little Tony to go to the craft barn is we can get one of those chocolate crepes. Okay, let's go. You know. Because they were delicious.
It's the same kind of stuff I have to do with Harper.
They were delicious.
Harper hates antiquing, so.
You know, once you get her there, she gets into it.
If you give her a lollipop and tell her, you know, find the weirdest thing you can find.
And she'll find it.
And she'll be busy doing that.
Like, I'm going to find this and freak out my sister.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what she does. So, and she'll go and tell her, this is haunted, honey.
So moral of the story is if you find a set of something, try and not split it up.
Yeah, because it could be bad.
No haunting involved. Just
we'll be able to show these doors in a coming episode of the program.
So yeah.
I'm excited about that. Let's do something that we've done. Let's start this out by showing a little before. And what exactly would you call this project, first of all?
Which project are we talking about?
This is the hallway project.
Okay, it's a hallway project.
It's a hallway project. This is the hallway project. Okay. You see, I'm trying to find the segue cut point here.
Do you have
because this show gets cut into segments as well for just the specific topics.
Do you have a before of the hallway?
I do.
Okay, the hallway was the Twilight Zone hallway because when you looked down at the walls were gray and all the art in it were black and white photos, except for the green wall where I got started before we took a before picture. The doors are black, the trim's white. It just looked like you were looking into the Twilight Zone. Even the rug was different shades of gray along with the floor. And I was like, it's so over the top with the gray and white and black that it really just bothered me because it looked like you're looking into a
abyss.
So I started out with the accent wall at the end, painting it kind of a blue, and the blue ended up not really working with the other colors that we were using. And it looks more green in this picture, but it was it's a real pretty blue. I think it's called Wythe blue. It's a Benjamin Moore color, but it didn't really go with the colors in the adjoining room. So we just decided to start from scratch. And it's a long hallway with a lot of doors. And I thought, I'm going to try something I've never done before. And I wanted to try doing a board and batten wainscoting. So that's what I attempted here. I cheated a little bit because I didn't do the board part of the board and batten. I just did the battens and then painted from the top rail down white and used my sheetrock, which was slightly textured, and then did the green color from the top rail of the wainscoting to the ceiling.
Now, let me ask you, I was not present at the store when you purchased the board and batten
components.
What did you buy?
Okay. I went to Home Depot on this one.
And this is not a sponsorship.
It's not. I bought all this. They had no idea what I was doing. Anyway, I went to the aisle where they have all the moldings and the trim, and they usually have thin poplar pieces for kind of crafts and stuff like that. And they had some that were 1/4 inch thick by 3 inches wide, which is technically it's 2.5 inches wide by 4 foot long. And I knew I wanted my wainscoting to be around 4 foot, 4.5 feet ish. So I went ahead and got all the battens and that 1/4 inch by 2.5 by 4 foot tall. And I didn't have to cut those, which saved me a lot of time. I could just get them up. Then they also had in that same poplar material, they had the half inch version, but slightly wider. So I went with a 1/2 inch by 4 inch, 4 foot long piece for the top rail. And then the cap on that was, it's actually a 1 inch by 1/2 inch thick small trim piece that I already had. I don't even know where I got it. It was part of, actually, it was part of what I used to fix the screen door. It was just a real generic trim piece, but each of the layers butted out an extra 1/4 inch. So you kind of got this layered effect, but it was all already small pieces, no major planning or anything like that. I had to cut the top rails to fit, you know, between the doorways.
Sure.
But it was within a couple of hours, I had all the woodwork up.
You did.
It took me longer to do all the caulking because you want to, when you do this and you don't use the actual board behind there, you want to caulk the seams where all the battens touch the sheetrock because it makes it look like it's all one piece rather than these sticks just stuck to your wall.
And I think it's important to think about this because we talked about it a little bit earlier where, yes, the board and batten, the board is what you would see in kind of traditional or what here's what you have to do. Well, guess what? In home design today, there is no you have to do it this way, unless it's like a safety issue.
A safety issue, or it's not going to hold up. This was, again, one of those purely aesthetic projects that I was like, it's fine with me if the white board part has a slight texture. It saved me a ton of effort, a ton of, you know, time and a little bit expense of trying to get all the boards up.
Sure.
And I didn't want to encroach on the width of the hallway anyway, because, you know, the hallway's 3 feet wide. I did not want to make it, you know, any more narrow. And you start adding a 1/2 inch or, you know, 1/4 inch to each side. And then you have the top rail that's a little bit further in and the trim that's a little bit further in. It just makes it feel too narrow. So I just went the easy way on this one.
And, you know, it looks great. I was shocked how quick you got it up. It was literally, I was downstairs in my office working on some behind the scenes stuff for this show. And I came up like, oh, we have a whole project, an extra one we can put on the show today. and we're ready to go with it. So it was really, this is like less than a weekend project. This is like a half a day.
It was about a day and a half just because of the the dry time and the caulking and everything. But you could easily get it knocked out in a weekend. It's a very good beginner project. I will say part of the reason I went so fast was I do have a nail gun with an air compressor. If you have a nail gun, that will work. Even screwing the battens in and then covering the nail holes, it's still a pretty quick project.
And she does threaten me with it sometimes.
I just want to do. I'm scared of it because I know at some point I'm going to nail right through my hand and it's going to hurt.
My Uncle Jeff told you a story about that, didn't he?
Yeah.
And that kind of freaked the shit out of you and you didn't touch the nail gun for like
a month. I'm extra careful because of Uncle Jeff. I'm always thinking about the things he's taught us.
I got her the nail gun for Christmas.
Yeah.
And the air compressor. And then it was sitting in my office where we opened it for about a month after Jeff shared that story with her when we were in Wisconsin over the holidays.
I decided about halfway getting the shiplap up on the fireplace that screwing those in was just ridiculous. So I went down and I thought I'm going to figure this thing out. And I did it without your guidance. I got
you did
working all on my own and the rest of it went so fast. It's like, now that I have that, I always have to have one of those. I can't do projects without it anymore.
Were you like our 5-year-old who, when she's confronted with something that she's kind of scared of, she's like, okay, Jenny, I'm going to face my fears. I can handle this. I'm going to go get the nail gun and the air compressor out, and I'm going to nail the heck out of this.
She
does that.
She's the pro at positive self-talk.
She is. I mean, she's like a little, who's the guy? Tony Robbins.
She is.
she's like, and you're going to do this, and you can do it. You can do it. And it's like, thank you for the motivational speech, honey. I will get you that marshmallow now.
My goal when I opened the box was to not hurt myself.
Yeah.
So I set the bar low and I surpassed it.
You did. I think it turned out really, really well. And I applaud you for not just having to follow the traditional, we must have the board. Let's do it this way. Because it looks
on the damn hallway?
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And cheating, hacking, whatever. Don't be afraid to do it in home improvement projects. That's my point. As long as you're not like going to kill yourself.
If you achieve the look that you want and you're happy with it, that's all that matters.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And I think that's what holds a lot of people back. Just go and do it.
Don't make it harder than it needs to be.
You can do it. You can do it. So anyway, check that out. More images on that on our website, junkinwithjenny.com. Okay, let's move over to,
let's do an object.
Let's do an object. Let's do this. Tray tables. Did you have tray tables as a child?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. They were just that honey oak set that, you know.
Everyone has?
Everybody had that. But
we had two
sets.
We had one that was really old. It was the metal, like the aluminum type. I don't even know what the top was made out of. Probably another just aluminum type thing that looked like wood, but it was aluminum. And if you leaned on it or something, they would bend, they'd break. But so you just kind of, you know, you were careful with them. But my God, I used the heck out of tray tables growing up. It was a constant thing where we're, you know, watching TV and we never, like, TV dinners were a treat if we got them because, oh my gosh, mom cooked. But it was like, ooh, I get a Hungry Man dinner tonight. This is special. Like kid cuisine. That was a neat thing. It wasn't like, oh shit, kid cuisine again. We would use the tray tables all the time. And then later they bought one, one wood one, not a set, one.
Well, maybe it was at a garage sale
and
it was
fought like over it.
It was probably like a quarter or
we
something.
We fought over it. We threw things at each other. We said horrible things to each other and we don't really.
Well, we had the set with the stand and it got a lot of use.
Yeah.
But the set that, the picture that was sent to us, it's a black stand. The legs are black. The tabletop has kind of a butterfly shape, like a real gradual butterfly shape, and it's red.
It looks like on the red, you could put a Ouija board, etch one into it or something, and then you have like multiple Ouija boards going at one time in a room.
So what I would do with this is I would start making end tables. And here's how I would do it. I would take the butterfly-shaped top off of the legs.
Okay.
Keep the legs. And sometimes you find neat old suitcases at antique malls or flea markets or rummage sales.
Sure.
And I would affix the legs to that, and that would make an end table.
Okay.
The other thought along kind of the same lines, but not a permanently affixed thing is you can take those and add strapping and make a fold up suitcase holder for guests.
I could see that.
Like you have in a hotel. Yeah.
I would still use them as tray tables. I really wouldn't change the use. I would just change the look. I would change it to just kind of a fun retro modern feel. I would do some sort of recoding on this thing so it doesn't look like this.
Would you scrub the edges so it's not a butterfly?
No, I think I would probably stay with that. Because I think it's kind of weird retro-y feel.
Okay.
I would go with that, but I would just do a much lighter color to it. Almost probably something almost like our fireplace color that we did earlier.
Kind of that. Yeah, that vintage green.
Yeah, that vintage green to kind of give it that fun feel. And I would then etch into it some sort of interesting, fun sort of saying, but I would do it kind of in that retro logo-ish style. You know what I'm talking about?
Kind of.
If I can.
Like you see an old light up road signs.
Yes.
For hotels and stuff.
Exactly. I mean, okay. And I'm seeing if I can just kind of pull something up off of my phone here as an example. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it or not. But just some fun lettering, interesting lettering, like almost like what you would put like on the pantry door.
Yeah.
You know, I'm talking about just kind of the retro, like what you'd see in an old doctor's door that was kind of fancy lettering back in the day.
What would you have it say?
Just something simple like eat food. I mean, something, I mean, here's, if I can, this is an app I use for some graphics app. It's called Word Swag. If I can get into the camera, it's the light blue part of the app there. But anyway, I can't pull it up very well. But that's the style I would go with.
Okay.
Just kind of a retro, modern, fun, and then put something fun on there. Maybe even change, like, if you find a... And this is what I would do with spray paint over it, with if I can find some sort of, you know, the lettering itself to etch. Probably have to go to a craft store to find it. You can maybe find the molds, or not the mold. What's it called where you paint through a...
Stencil?
A stencil, okay. Yes, of some sort, almost. Maybe you could get one made up online or something, like an Etsy type thing. Like, here's the design I want. Can you make this for me? Even have like a, you know, picture of a fish or something on it that could be kind of stenciled and put on there. And that's what I would do. Just kind of make it fun and, you know, semi-modern.
Okay.
So that seems to be kind of an in thing right now. And then 10 years from now, everybody goes, well, that was really kind of tacky. Just like we do with the pineapples on the top of the rooms and sponge paint.
Oh, the pineapple stenciled borders.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that's my direction there. Let's go to a space. And I saw this earlier in the day, and I was thinking, ooh, I'm going to try and use our design program to make something out of this.
And you had no time to do that.
I had zero time to do this because I was working on getting the show ready with all the other stuff we were doing. Uh-huh. But I look forward to future episodes where we can really do that with some of these spaces.
Okay, so this space is basically a family room that adjoins to a kitchen. There's a kind of like a breakfast bar that divides the kitchen and eating area from the family room. And it's very sparsely furnished. It almost looks like maybe this home is on the market, but there's a small rug in front of the couch and then two chairs that are side by side with an end table flanking both chairs and an ottoman in between where the sofa and the chairs kind of meet. They are at a right angle. And then there's a TV in front of the couch, and everything is so lined up and stiff in this picture.
I wouldn't call it sparsely furnished. I just think improperly furnished.
Well, but the thing is, you look at the walls and everything, it looks like they pretty well moved out everything that they were going to take, and they left this to make the home look lived in.
Sure.
Anyway, what I'm thinking is the furniture needs to be rearranged and less formal, I guess. Mm-hmm. I would move the furniture to, there's a long wall that extends this, you know, the length of the living room over to the breakfast area. I would move the couch more towards that wall and have the chairs facing the couch, but with a space in between. So it feels less walled off. Because right now the couch has its back towards everything going on in the kitchen. So whoever's sitting on the couch has to constantly look back to talk to whoever's in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. I think if you kind of work more perpendicular to the kitchen, then it's more comfortable.
Sure.
I would leave the TV where it is. I think just because you have the furniture doesn't mean it all has to be out. I would get rid or put away maybe one of these end tables just because I know it's a set, but you really don't need one on each end.
Yeah.
The rug is far too small for this area. Rule of thumb with rugs is you want the front feet of your chairs and your sofa, anything that's in your sitting area, to be on the rug. And if it's too small for that, then you've got too small of a rug.
Yeah.
You need at least an 8x10 for this. This looks to be like a 5x7.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of floating there. Mm-hmm. But if you do that, it makes the sitting area feel more, you know, conjoined and less, you know,
sure,
disrupted like it is right now.
I would get rid of the weird armoire that's in the kitchen.
I bet you that's a pantry.
That probably is what that is.
I would lay money. They've repurposed it as a pantry.
Yeah, it looks like a hotel armoire where you can open it up and there's the TV and there's the remote and order your channels. That would be gone. Where the couch is, I would probably move it up a little bit. And if I can get a little bit longer couch, I would do that. Dump the two chairs. Get a footstool that matches the couch or something for that. Maybe a little bit longer piece of some sort. Yes, the rug needs to be changed. I would go with some sort of rug that doesn't look exactly like the carpet. I think, I don't know why people do that with rugs where they look almost the same tone as the carpet that it's on top of.
I get putting a rug on top of the carpet, but right. If it blends in, maybe to protect the carpet underneath.
Well, I get the rug, but I don't get the same color as the carpet. I would go with something that pops a little bit. And what I would actually do with the TV is I would do a built-in type thing, almost as what we have done here, and we've showcased on a previous episode, a very easy built-in where you have the two bookshelves on the end, cabinetry in the bottom, all just stock stuff you get at the store. And then in the middle, you got your large projection screen. And there's enough room here. This is a tall ceiling. Yes, there is a fan. There may have to be some compromise there. Although I'm not sure. It really kind of depends where you put it. And I would have it be a nice big projection screen out there. So you could sit there, you could watch a movie, you could have people over for a game or something, and you could still be cooking in the kitchen. People could be sitting at that bar area right there. Turn your stools around. You can see the screen really well. And if you do it nice and tastefully, it actually works. I wouldn't just like have a pull down screen. Mm-hmm. I think what we had done, and I don't know what episode it's on, it's on probably the first 10. You can do a space with a movie screen tastefully without it being a movie or a theater room. And I think that this would be a good space where that could be done in.
I saw this picture and I immediately thought of our last house. It's pretty much the same layout, living room.
It is kind of similar. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, or you could do the fireplace thing where that is too. And just like we talked about at the beginning of the episode, you could do that exact same type of fireplace right where that TV is and then mount your TV up on the wall.
I would add some coziness because it's
really would.
A very sparse room and it needs some color. At least one wall needs to be painted a color. I don't know about anybody else, but I'm so over the gray trend.
The safe, the stagnant, the permanently my house is on the market look.
Yeah.
It has to die. And I think it is.
I think so.
People are starting to jump into color again and liking it and going, this is fun. This is what I want. I want to live here. I don't want to feel like my house has to be safe for everyone because you're the one that's in your house.
Right.
And
by that you mean safe taste wise, not like I have a safe home. You won't be hurt here in this home.
Not at all like that. No, I wasn't even thinking that.
But No.
But that's the direction I go with color. Just colors that aren't beige or gray. I mean, some of that or just kind of mauvey and safe, basically slight cousins of white.
Okay.
It's like there's a place for white. But it's like, it's not the only thing.
I'm adding a lot more white back to the palette in our house, but I'm doing it in conjunction with bolder colors. So you don't notice how much white's going on as far as still having a neutral. I'm just over the gray. It's so drab and kind of sad.
Well, it's amazing because you can add so many dark, bold colors in large quantities. And still have white with it and balance it with white. And suddenly the space feels larger and brighter than it did when it was just white or a cousin of white.
Right.
And it's amazing what that dark will do.
Yeah.
It really does quite a bit. We have one more item before we wrap up the program today.
Okay.
And it is this godforsaken cooler. It looks like an old ice cream cooler that's rusted to hell, or meat cooler or something, some sort of industrial strength cooler, or somebody who was really serious about freezing stuff in their garage in 1982.
Okay. You know what? I honestly like it the way it looks with the rust and all, because what I would do with it was I would use it on a patio or an outdoor space. Mm-hmm. And as I'm entertaining, I would just throw ice in the bottom of that thing and throw drinks in it and use it as a giant cooler.
And you would have to create an updated bath for it, because obviously you're not going to throw 400 pounds of ice into this every time you're up, you're entertaining to fill it up to the top. You'd have to tub it out a bit.
You make it a lot more shallow, so it's not quite so deep. But I like, because the height of it, I really like. And I think that it could really work for that purpose. And if it gets rained on, it's just going to rust even more.
Yeah.
I personally don't find rust offensive. No. I like rust. I make things rust on purpose. So I would keep it as is and kind of still use it in its original function. Other than that, I don't really see, for me, I don't really see another idea on what to do with it. What about you?
No, I like the idea of using it outside for like an outdoor patio bar type space where you can almost put stools on one side of it because it's that big. And I agree. You could either, if you want to tub it out, you could tub it out and use it for that specific purpose. Or you could get those, the doors, they're kind of obtruse a little bit on it, but you might want to replace that with something a little flatter. But I would actually, I would consider using it outside as an outdoor patio bar type set.
Okay.
Where you got the two or three stools on one side, one on the other for your bartender or your server. And I would actually roach it out even more. I would do some of the product on there to make this thing even more rusty, to get some of the blues and some of the turquoise rust that really can come out of this.
Like, well, that's not rust. That's when you use the copper paint. The verdigris.
I would want to get it that.
Okay.
That, and I understand, but I want to make it look like it's even that more weathered.
Okay.
Just super weathered, but then stop. So I would get it to that point and then seal it so it doesn't keep going.
Uh-huh.
And then keep it outside, but I'm not going to worry about it then being roached completely through.
Okay.
But I'd really, really get it just dramatically rusty. Not just this where it looks like it's been sitting outside, which it probably has. It looks like in a barn or something.
Yeah.
For several years. I would make it like, oh my God, oh, that's such a neat looking bar. First somebody's like, what is that giant heap of rust over here? And then it's like, what a neat piece.
You could easily just build a wooden barnwood countertop to go on top of the whole thing.
You could.
Just to use as a bar.
And that may be the best bet for something.
To kind of even out where the doors are and everything.
Just get that top off of there and put it on there. Gut it so it's easier to move and a lot lighter to move. Mm-hmm. I can only imagine how heavy it is with the refrigeration pieces inside.
Yeah.
But once you get that out of there, I'm sure the metal is pretty thick because it's a pretty old piece, so it's probably built really, really well. But there, I think, is a second life to this.
Yeah.
That could really be some fun outdoor entertaining.
I like that.
So that would be what I would do with that piece. All right. That's that. That is that piece. I think we've covered everything on the program today.
I think so.
Are you going to try some of the red here?
I will try some from your glass. I'm still working on my wine.
I was hoping you're going to just chug that on camera and then we could.
Oh, that's really good. I really like that.
It's nice. This is the 107 Vine. This is the Schomburgschen. I say it bad. Although it's a C, so is it Schomburgschen?
No, it's Schomburgschen.
Schomburgschen.
Anyway.
Schomburgschen. And this is her 2014 from 107 Vine here in Missouri.
Missouri.
I know. I screw up all the time. I've been here now for 2 years and I still, I don't know. They're over in Macon, Missouri, by the way. If you ever get over there, do check them out. The first urban vineyard in the state.
That's awesome.
We should definitely check it out when we're doing a road trip up north.
Okay.
To visit Wisconsin. I don't think it'd be that far off of our path, actually.
Probably not.
In the way that we go. But Chris and Jen, the vintners there, and just like us, they had a passion for something and they've turned it into a business.
Follow your passion.
It is. And that it just shows how that can be done.
Yes.
So really, really cool stuff. And they do have some other, they have a lot of other ones. And we'll probably show some of those on a future episode of the program. So thank you guys for being our creative juice of the week. That wraps up today's episode of Junkin' with Jenny. Thank you guys for watching. Go to our website. If you have any questions for the show, questions for Jenny, questions for myself about any space or place or item you have, send it to us through Facebook or through our website. We'd love to talk about it on a future episode of the program. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. That's Jenny Bruschi. We'll see you in the next episode of Junkin' with Jenny live every single Thursday night. Facebook, 8 p.m. Central Time. As long as Facebook is working. That's what we've been learning. If not, it will be there sometime. We will post it. Good night, everybody.